Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, July 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we talk farm-to-table recipes, and on the line, three people ready to share their farming and cooking experience. Alisa Spungen-Bildner and Rob Bildner are co-authors of the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook, and Chef Brian Allberg created most of the recipes in the book. It's a beautiful book. We'll talk all about it. If you have a question about farm-to-table cooking, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Alisa, Rob, Chef Brian, your calls coming up on Food Friday, right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Alisa Spungen-Bildner and Rob Bildner wrote the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook, 125 homegrown recipes from the hills of New England, as a tribute to the family farmers and farm-to-table chefs throughout the region. The couple's overarching message is buy local. Alisa was CEO of Fresh Pro, a fresh-cut produce company, a journalism professor at Rutgers and NYU, and a reporter for the New York Star-Ledger. Alisa is also a professionally trained chef, a busy person she has been. She attended the School of Natural Cookery in Boulder, Colorado, which focuses on plant-based, sustainable cooking. Rob is a former attorney who left the practice of law to create food distribution and manufacturing companies with the goal of bringing healthy, perishable food products to the retail market. Rob is a graduate of Yale, University of Pennsylvania Law School, and the Jewish Theological Seminary. And then there's Chef Brian Allberg, created most of the recipes in this book, Vice President of Culinary Development for Main Street Hospitality Group. Allberg has served as president of the board of Berkshire Grown and is the founding chair of Berkshire Farm and Table, an organization promoting Berkshire food culture. He's also a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and a regular on this program back when we had people in the studio. If you have a question about farm-to-table cooking, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And that's fine, too, but the number is 800-348-2551. Alisa and Rob, welcome to the show. It's certainly a beautiful book.
Well, Ray, thank you so much, and thank you for having us.
Yes. And, Ray, a great honor. We're major fans, so this is so exciting for us to be on the show.
And we're glad to be on with Brian. Hi, Brian. In this strange time, we're all in different places.
It really is a strange time. And before we look back on this years-long journey you took to make this beautiful book, let's welcome our old friend Brian Allberg, who has – it's been a while since you've been on the show. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
What's happening?
Oh, you know, just living the dream.
Really?
Right. Yeah. Glad the book's finally done. It was a great project to work on with Rob and Alisa. Just opened a new restaurant in North Adams called The Break Room at Greylock Works.
Oh, you
so
did?
I've been a little bit busy, yeah.
And
yeah,
so
I did.
How do you prepare to open a restaurant in the middle of a lockdown? That's got to be a little stressful.
It is, but it's been a project that's been started or been going on for about 2.5 years now.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, it was time. And the pandemic's been going on long enough where we kind of had redeveloped our views on how we operated. And, you know, there's guidelines put out by the state to help keep people safe. So we just focused on that. We focused on what we could do. And opened up last Thursday.
Well, congratulations on that, and we're glad to have you on the show. You have been long a champion of farm to table, and I imagine it was a kismet that you stumbled upon these two. Alisa and Rob, again, the book is something. Now, you two, putting aside the food background, you say, okay, a couple of lawyers here. This doesn't seem like a common sense thing that you would write a book like this, especially a book that took 3-4 years to actually research and make happen. What led you to write it?
Well, Ray, thanks for asking. I have to say it took longer than 3 or 4 years beginning, but, you know, we've lost track of the time. Well, thank you for asking that question. So the book idea really started probably six, seven, even more years ago, when our youngest, we have four children, all grown. Our youngest is Rafi Spangenbildner, who I believe is probably listening, who when he was in middle school took our backyard in Beckett, Massachusetts, and had a sort of a market garden and put his table out in front, sold it on the roadside, his produce, and then eventually learned farming. And started what he called October Mountain Farm. And we watched him farm, again, our backyard, but it was a half acre of intensely cultivated fruits and vegetables. And we watched him farm, saw how grueling it was, how hard it was. The return was really tough, but there's a lot of inherent satisfaction in doing that. And from that, and through Rafi, we were led to meet other farmers through the farmers markets that he sold at, and it got us interested in really learning about this community, which many of us who live in this area don't see because we're not farmers. And often they're off, you know, on dirt roads. Farms are off on dirt roads, places that we don't necessarily travel by.
You know, I
just add, Ray, that as food people, and I'm really the third generation in the business, my grandparents started a food chain, and our sons, Rafi, we mentioned, and our son Ari was running a beer place and a wine consultant, our fourth. And so we're inspired as we met these farmers at the farmers market to tell their stories, because they're doing extraordinary work in bringing local food to our community. And that's what got us going. And we met Brian really through Rafi, I think through a connection with Berkshire Grown. Brian is a champion of local food, and it's just been a wonderful collaboration among us and quite a long journey. It's been a few years for sure.
We're joined today by Alisa Spangenbildner and Rob Bildner, who have written the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook, 125 Homegrown Recipes, along with Chef Brian Allberg, who is also here and created many of the recipes in the book. Well, Alisa and Rob, I know that you originally came from New Jersey, but you've been in the Berkshires for decades now. What is it? You kind of get a perspective when you come from someplace else. What is it about the Berkshires that you think is so special?
Yeah, well, so for us, Ray, the Berkshires, we call it our spiritual home. Out of our four kids, two have been married here. The third is about to get married here. We really spend every major holiday family occasion here. Well, it's, you know, it's the land, it's magical, it's the culture, and it's also the food. The Berkshires is really a food hub, and we have enjoyed getting to know the local food scene throughout. So it's just a combination. We have good friends in the community, and it is a wonderful, supportive community. Now, you know, the local, as you well know, the community really supports our local farmers and our local chefs. So it's a magical place. We're privileged to be here, and we love being part and spreading the good word around the country about the Berkshires.
And I would just add, Ray, that apropos what Rob just said, we'd like people even beyond the Berkshires to know that it's not just only a cultural mecca, which of course it is, and the scenery is phenomenal, and the hiking and the, you know, swimming and all the stuff that you do in the Berkshires, that's great. But really to know it as a place that's characterized by being a farm-to-table culture, both in terms of the small family farms that populate this area and the farm-to-table restaurants that use what these farmers grow.
You know, the book itself, it's beautifully done, and we're going to delve into that in a moment. We'll take a quick break. We're joined today by Alisa Spangenbildner and Rob Bildner, who wrote the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook, along with Chef Brian Allberg, who is also here. You want to give us a call, it's 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back on Food Friday. One 800 348 2551 is the number. It's Food Friday. Ray Graff here. The new book is the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook, 125 Homegrown Recipes from the Hills of New England. We're joined today by Alisa Spangenbildner and Rob Bildner, as well as Chef Brian Allberg. And Brian, you know, in the introduction to this book, I was taken by one fact, and I'm not sure that Alisa and Rob quoted this or whether they found this out on their own. But And help me out. Understand this. You're a farm-to-table guy. The amount of local food consumed in the Berkshires is 3% of the total. Has that number changed? Are you seeing a trend at all, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely changing. And it's definitely, we're utilizing more product. Restaurants are getting more involved in getting that product. I think there's such a huge influx of CSAs and such that, you know, the regular consumer is getting it sometimes before the restaurants can get it. But things are growing in such a way that, you know, that's changing.
I mean, what do you do at Berkshire Farm and Table to make that increase, to make that number get higher?
Well, it's marketing. It's spreading the word. It's building awareness. You know, it's kind of just, it's what we do every day. I mean, we're constantly meeting with farmers. We're constantly meeting with restaurant people. And, you know, it's just a process.
You want to jump in here, Elisa or Rob, and then we'll get to the calls?
Sure. So, Rob, do you remember with the 3%? It was
yeah, that was actually Will Conklin, I believe, at Skyview Farm in Sheffield, who gave us that data. And we were also struck by that, Ray. But as we've done our research, we clearly have a tremendous opportunity to encourage folks to buy more local, and frankly, that's what our book is all about.
So one of the things that, in fact, I remember this from our first book talk a year ago, before the book was even published, we were exhorting our audiences, we're telling them that statistic and saying, please go out, buy local. It's really important to support regional, you know, the regional food system and to support small family farms in this area, because it's a question. Yes, it's a very small number, but part of it is that people don't realize the importance of buying local and the benefits of buying local and the benefits of supporting small family farms. So it's essential that we all go out and support these great folks.
You know, when I do shows where we talk about farm to table, I often ask our guests, you know, are you doing this for philosophical or political reasons, or is it about taste? And almost all of them say yes, all of those things. And when we do wine shows, we'll talk about terroir and the unique flavor of a geographic region.
Totally. We write in the book that our farmers, the farmers that we've enjoyed spending so much time with over these past years, are philosophically committed, spiritually committed, environmentally committed, community-minded, and really care at the bottom line, of course, with healthy and absolutely delicious food. And nothing compares to, you know, a locally grown strawberry tomato. We all know that.
Ray, I don't know if you remember this, but you did a show with Adam Zeminski of Cafe Adam. I forgot how many years ago. Mm. And Adam gave you 2 carrots to taste. Blind tasting. You tasted the carrots, yeah. And Adam said, pick which one you like best. Do you remember the show?
Yes. I don't remember if I passed or failed the test, but
you passed it, Ray, because you know what? You picked the local carrot, and Adam was enthralled. And by the way, so was I listening to the show. We're long-time listeners. And certainly the issue of taste, there's a clear-cut difference in taste. Nutrition, difference in nutrition, because you're eating food that has not been, schlepped across the country or wherever it's being schlepped from. You're getting it, you know, like the next day here because it's from here. So I think it's really important to know those things. And there's many reasons, but those are 2 big ones.
Yeah, one of the points you make in the introduction, which, by the way, is a good read in itself, is that, you know, a lot of the produce you get in your grocery store, it starts in California, it might sit for a few days, and then it might travel for a few days, and then it might sit in a warehouse in New Jersey for a few days, and by the time it's on your plate, it's a week old.
Ray, that was my life for almost 20 years. And we had a wonderful company, and we took very good care of the produce that we sold, and we prided ourselves on supplying really high quality. But the truth is, it was a 10-day lag. There's, you know, we're on the East Coast. The produce is grown in California, and my company still exists. It's called Fresh Pro. They do a great job, but honestly, you can't compare locally grown to that type of food.
Hey, let's take a call or two here. We got some food questions, and we also want to talk about some of this great food in the book. The book is The Berkshires Farm Table Cookbook, 125 homegrown recipes from the hills of New England. We're joined today by Elisa Spungen-Bildner and Rob Bildner and Chef Brian Allberg. The number is 800-348-2551. Charles in the Hudson Valley. Charles, you're up.
Hey, yeah, hello. I have a question. I'm living in an area that also has some great locally grown food in the Hudson Valley, and I get over to the Berkshires sometimes too and love the food over there, but I'm on a keto diet right now that I need to move off of. I've lost a fair bit of weight during this COVID thing.
Yeah.
And I'm staying off of all of the carbohydrates and the sugars at this point, so I can't even bite into a beet. But I've gone far enough now, and I don't want to dive back into the meat and potatoes regime right away. I kind of want to do what I've been doing, which is kind of grazing on things and getting something, the freshest thing I could find. And I was wondering what a good, like, just to narrow the scope here, a good root vegetable would be, or they say that vegetables above the ground have less carbohydrate than the root vegetables in the ground. But instead of like turning to potato, I can find almost anything here in the summer. And what would be a good choice of a couple things to start adding to my diet that brings some carbohydrate into it?
Chef Ahlberg, you want to tackle this one?
I mean, I'm not a nutritionist, so I probably am not the best person to ask. But first thing that would come to my mind would be celery root. I think that would probably be a good alternative.
That's cool. I'm very traditional. I'll like go for plain celery, but the celery root or an anise root or something like that. A celery root's a good idea. Yeah.
So I would add, if I could jump in for a second.
Sure, Lisa, go ahead.
You mentioned, it'll be funny going back and forth there. You mentioned celery root. We do have a recipe for celery root soup, which is a really great recipe. But you asked about munching, and it's interesting because I have to tell you something. I didn't know the above root, above and beyond, whatever distinction that you made. But I would say, again, not to focus so much on carrots, which I did focus on earlier, but if you get a local carrot, the sweetness of it is extraordinary. And there's a recipe, for example, in our book, Burnt Carrots, thanks to Brian, and also thanks to the farmer who suggested this recipe initially.
Dominic.
And Dickens said, why don't you take some carrots? He actually steamed them until they burnt themselves to death. But we actually suggest to roast them and let their sugars come out. You could add a little honey. You could add a little orange zest, whatever you might want to do. And the sweetness of those fresh carrots with even just a little addition will be so satisfying to you. I truly guarantee it. So that's just, that's just one idea.
All right, Charles, thank you very much for the call. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to join the conversation today. Now, this is an interesting, and I had mentioned this journey that you took to write this book, and it literally was. You're walking around the dirt roads and everything else, and basically, as I understand it, most of these recipes, if not suggested by, were certainly influenced by specific farms in the region, correct?
Correct. So we want to be very clear about that. There are certainly recipes that are done by farm-to-table chefs that we've adapted, and that and certainly there are Brian's recipes that are directly from, and he can speak about the recipes that are directly from, like Red Lion and et cetera. But all the rest of the recipes are inspired by the farmers, either what they grow or what they raise. And Brian took that inspiration, and he can speak better about this, and turned them into recipes that mimic what these farms do. For example, and of course there are other farm to table chefs we use. I'll just mention Dan Smith, Rachel Portnoy, and Frank Tessier. We weren't able to include Bjorn Samlo, also a great one. Peter Platt. There's so many, and so their recipes are in the book adapted. The others are Brian's recipes based on the farms.
Chef Ahlberg.
Yes.
Well, do you want to comment on the process in which you created some of these?
It was such a fun process. I mean, I remember the first round of narratives that the builders sent me. It included Dominic Palumbo from Moon in the Pond Farm, and he was actually the one that inspired the burnt carrots. But it was really interesting to read not only what the farmers ate, but not necessarily based on what they grew, but also what their thoughts were on food. Most of them, didn't have like a professional chef's kind of view. So a lot of things were simple and, but just so good to start with. So it was thoroughly inspirational to write based on a narrative where a farmer was giving their background and history and, talking about their terroir and all of those things. So it was such a great process.
You know,
I loved it.
Hold that thought, man. The one thing I can do in a kitchen is burn things. So hold the thought on the burned carrots for a minute. Let's grab a call, and then I want to delve further into that. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gene is in Kerhonkson. Gene.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to make a comment that as a result of COVID, I decided to join a local CSA this year. I live in the Rondout Valley, and we have a number of farms here. And frankly, I have never, like, eaten so healthy in my life. The vegetables are wonderful. The fruits are starting to come out. And several years ago, I purchased a book based on a guest that you had, Ray, on your show.
You're kidding me.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing this book. And, you know, hopefully you'll expand my palate a little bit more. So thank you so much.
I think you'll like this. This is a beautiful book. And, you know, as a radio guy, I probably read at a fourth grade level anyway. But the pictures are beautiful. So
thank you, Ray. And I want to just add to the listener that we give in that introduction you mentioned several ways to support the local farmers. You know, our messaging is, you know, buy local, know your farm. And one of them is definitely, if you can, join a CSA. And our farms that we, farmers we met, the CSAs are really doing very well. Obviously, many more people have enrolled in them, but also the farm stands of the farms in the region are wonderful to visit. Their restaurants with takeout. In fact, our son Rafi actually has a pizza pop-up in a farm in Katchke Farms in the Hudson Valley with all kinds of local produce from that farm. And ask your local store to carry, locally grown produce. Rafi's place is Hilltown Hot Pies. So anyway, thank you to the listener who mentioned CSAs. They're really important.
Gene, thanks a lot.
Just saying,
go ahead, Lisa.
By the way, Brian, I'm glad you had a good time. We had a good time, too. I'm glad we all agree on it.
Great time.
But if you can't join a CSA or you don't know where CSA is, there are places you can certainly check in locally with Berkshire Grown. They can help you with their farm directory, find CSAs and everything that you need in terms of farming. You can go on localharvest.org. There's another website. It's farming. It'll
farm
come
finder.
To me. What's the
farmfinder.com, I think.
I can get that one, too. But there are places you can go, even if you live in New York City or you live in, you know, whatever, not by a farm.
By the way, your son Rafi, how much sleep does he get? It's got to be a tremendous amount of work to be a farmer.
By the way, Ray,
thank you, Ray.
Probably on the phone.
That's a family issue, not enough.
Yeah, it's got to be tough. I mean, why? First of all, you know, you see all these beautiful farms, and I wonder how many actual young people are actually getting into this. And
super question.
It's got to be tough work.
Tough work. The average age of farmers, Ray, is actually around 60, but we're, of our 42 farmers and chefs we interview, about nine of them we would consider to be on the younger side, younger farmers. And so it is encouraging, but, you know, it's important to realize that land is so expensive in our area, so it's critical to make it possible for younger people to be able to either lease land or get land. Some of our farmers had the benefit of local nonprofits that helped them. And also, you know, the cost of everything is just so expensive, but mentoring is really important for these younger farmers, and there is some good mentoring, and we are in a collaborative community. And we find the younger farmers we met incredibly inspiring people. They're just wonderful.
Alisa, you want to add anything?
I think it's a good answer.
All
we
right.
agree. It's good on air.
Well, that's great. We're joined today by Alisa Spungen-Bildner and Rob Bildner, who have written the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook, 125 Homegrown Recipes from the Hills of New England, along with Chef Brian Ahlberg, who has created these recipes. And, all right, man, page 83, the burnt carrots.
Yeah, so,
What gives?
First of all, I got to say, just to show how long it took to write the book,
yeah.
It wasn't Dominic from Moon in the Pond Farm.
It was
Dickens from Holiday Brook.
Correct.
But they were both in the same. They were both in that first batch, that first round of recipes. Dickens has a funny story behind it about steaming them and then forgetting them on the stove. But I converted that into just a roasted, a high roasted claret with just a little bit of salt and carrot coriander on it. You know, so just taking his funny story and converting it into a great vegetable dish.
It looks fantastic. Who took the pictures?
Yeah, and there's the photo across from that recipe on page 82. It's actually of Dickon and Ruth Crane with their dog and their pet pig at the time, Scar, on a just beautiful, beautiful farm. And the photo in the beginning of the introduction on page 12 is the sun rising over their farm, which is actually one of my favorite photos. I took the photography in the book. I did the farm photos.
Were you a trained photographer, Rob?
I'm trained by some wonderful mentors, including Steve Donaldson, who's one of the great Berkshire photographers. And I've attended a photography workshops around the country, including some at Yale. So I describe myself as a serious amateur, but I've been fortunate to have some great mentors.
Well, you're a pro now. You're in print, and you look
I don't know about that.
Now, the carrots, though, Brian, they're fantastic. I mean, it looks great. I'm a kind of a raw carrot eater, but this looks like something I could really go for. Is this something
it kind of goes to what Elise was talking about roasting them and breaking down those sugars. And it's such a great flavor. It's just like caramelized, and yet there's no additional sugar added to it. And it's really cool what you can do with a fresh product like that.
You know, you and I have talked before on this program about chefs adapting what they do and their offerings based on what is available. And have you stolen anything from this book and put it on display in your new restaurant?
Well, actually this book has kind of inspired the way I'm cooking now, and I'm really focusing on more vegetable forward dishes. You know, letting the season, I've always cooked seasonally, but now I'm kind of more uber seasonal, just because I have the outlet, and because I'm focusing on vegetables versus proteins, I have to be more like, I have to go with the flow with what's there,
you know,
so it could change next week. Like, you know, I had ramps this, you know, a month ago, and then all of a sudden I didn't have ramps.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with scapes, and, you know, strawberries are done now. So it's like, we just cook with what we can when we can.
You know, it's so funny. We're talking about CSAs and the number of farmers in our region. We're specifically talking about the Berkshires today, but it's any of the local regions. And
absolutely. Hudson Valley's like that. I mean, they're everywhere.
But
these little microenvironments.
One of the points, though, that was brought up, and I'm not sure if Rob or Elisa mainly wrote the introduction or maybe they wrote it together, but one of the issues, and I assume this is an issue for you as a restaurateur, is that there might be eight farmers who grow tomatoes, but there might only be one or two who grow asparagus. And so how do you work with that?
That is a chef's challenge, and it's one that we constantly talk to our farmers about. Once we get in with a good group of people that are collaborative, they tend to start to grow what you want them to grow. But yeah, there's like, you know, it could be eight farms growing heirloom tomatoes. Well, that kind of saturates the market and doesn't give us alternative vegetables during tomato season.
Yeah.
And it also becomes more economical for farmers to diversify and to grow different crops, because it's hard to buy enough tomatoes from one farmer when eight of them are selling them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's an educational process for the farmer as well to understand that.
But how do you, we have to take a break, but the question that I would have is, how do you, without sort of manipulating a market, and I'm not even sure that's legal, get farmers to diversify so that there's more, everybody's doing different things?
Well, I think that it becomes an issue of economics. If there's eight farms in an area that all grow tomatoes, it's hard for them to all make enough money on that product. Whereas if a restaurant needs, say, tomatillos, say something, you know, something different that could be grown here, and one farmer broke away from that, then that farmer would have that market share.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean?
No, I get it.
It's just like if there's eight hotels on a city block, all offering rooms, your market share is so limited.
Yeah. No, you make a point. Let's take a quick break here. Elisa Spungen-Bildner is here and Rob Bildner. They are the authors of the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook. Also, Chef Brian Allberg, who created many of the recipes in the book. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Also, voxpop at wamc.org if you have an email. And we will get back to the phones and the email in a moment. Talk about local foods. That's local musicians at their very finest. Pete and Tony Levin, the Levin brothers, here on Vox Pop Food Friday. 800-348-2551. 1-800-3. You guys are on. 800. Don't swear. 800-348-2551. One of the problems with doing, you know, shows like this where the guests aren't in the studio, they don't know when we're on. It is what it is. Chef Brian Allberg, who you heard there, is with us. Also, Elisa Spungen-Bildner and Rob Bildner, who have written the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook, 125 homegrown recipes from the hills of New England. You know, it's not easy for the host. It's really not easy for the guest, especially when there's more than one. And all three of you are doing very, very well. So we really appreciate it.
We're trying, Ray.
Ray, do you mind if I jump in? Because I do want to finish a little bit, if you don't mind, the question that Brian was just talking about or answering the question.
Sure.
I want to just mention that there was something that really helped the small farmers in the area sort of diversify and sell their products, and that's the origination of Marty's Local, which is a food hub started in this area. And so Nick. we all say hi to you. But that really helped small farmers sort of help them to know what to grow, who would buy it, et cetera. So it was a really great addition to the infrastructure. And just one other thing, just to go back to Brian's discussion earlier of how it really matters in terms of taste, et cetera, whether something's fresh, et cetera, and also that chefs really work around whatever is available. And we were so struck by the chefs that we spoke to, and, you know, again, and those we didn't spoke to. I'm thinking of really all of them, but Dan Smith, Bjorn Somlo, you know, Stephen Browning, Peter Platt, they all talked about how they would, you know, change their menus in an instant based on whatever was fresh because that's what made the dish.
Mm. And Michael Ballin, we have to give a shout out, who sadly passed away, I guess 2 years ago now, Castle Street Cafe.
Yeah.
We did have the opportunity to spend a fair amount of time with him, and he really was one of the pioneers of farm to table. And he, you know, we were inspired as he spoke about changing the menu constantly. And I think he said once something like, "What's so new about this? This is how we always, human beings always ate based on what they could grow at the time."
Yeah.
What's wasn't new is the stuff, to be honest, you know, my company and others were doing of getting a tomato year round and flying them in from, you know, Europe and Spain and just making sure there was always that product in the supermarket 365 days a year. That's what's new.
I do want to mention, though, that the cookbook, even though it's based on fresh, it certainly can be used year-round for several reasons. One is, yes, you can find these, you know, ingredients year-round. Our message is, if you can find them local, buy local.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but the recipes will clearly work no matter when it is. And also just a shout out to the farmers, because their shoulder seasons, their seasons before the summer, their seasons after the fall, have really extended. And they're growing really, I'm not going to say year round, but many of them are really pushing with high tunnels, low tunnels, really amping up their farming to be. Yeah.
Boy, you two are good.
Yeah,
I hope
true.
You're not asking for a billable hour after this, because that. All right, here's an email.
Sorry, right.
We're long out of it.
We're very passionate.
Oh, good, good. This one came in from Ann and Adams. Ann says, "I just got some gorgeous beets from my local farmer's market. What's a good simple recipe for beet salad, and do I have to cook them first?" That's from Ann.
You don't have to cook them. You guys want to answer? You can answer it.
You answer. You start.
It's your recipe.
Okay.
So I was just going to say, I would do it a couple of different ways. I would roast some of them, and I would shave some of them raw so you get some crunch, and just a little olive oil, salt, pepper, Dress your greens with a little fresh squeezed lemon juice, olive oil, a little salt, and then you got the rich, earthy, roasted, sweet piece of beet, and then you've got the crunchy, kind of dirty part of the beet, which I think adds an awesome dimension to it.
I'm just going to jump in with one recipe that I happen to love from this book, which is our beet and goat cheese latkes.
Ooh.
Thank you, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Latkes potato pancakes.
Yeah.
Great way to, you know, sort of an alternative beyond the sort of boring but just potato latkes or potato pancakes.
Yeah.
Really makes use of beets. There's a feta and roasted beet salad. We use beets a fair amount, thanks to Brian.
You know,
I love beets. Beets are one of my favorites.
I never liked – my father loved beets, and he grew beets in our backyard, and he ate them and tried to make me – I wouldn't – but now I'm on – I got the beet powder, and I put it in water every morning. Well, I can lift the Volkswagen now. It's incredible.
There you go.
All right, let's go back to the phones.
They're for to die from.
And by the way, Brian, I'm sorry. Ray, I was like you in that I really didn't like beets.
Yeah.
Sort of because I hated the red getting all over if you're using real red beets and not other varieties.
Yeah.
But somebody told me, somebody who's a mentor actually as well, told us that, you know what, if you just put oil over your hands in working with beets, et cetera, a little bit of oil, that stain won't happen, and do them over the sink so it's not all over your floor and your counter. That sort of solved the problem of cooking with beets.
Who knew? All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Alisa Spungen-Bildner and Rob Bildner are here. They have written the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook. Chef Brian Allberg is here, too. Let's go to Joe in Atlas. Joe, you're on.
Hello, it's Jim in Adams, Mass.
Oh, my gosh. It has Joe in Atlas. All right, well, whatever. You're here, and I'm here, and whatever.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Ray, as usual, yay, Ray.
Hey, man, good.
You don't get enough recognition.
Thank you.
All right, if I can possibly amp your guest up a little bit more, on one of your previous callers, showing a little bit of concern about sugar content and carbohydrates in beets and or other vegetables. Every vegetable or fruit you see, you always want to pick the most vibrant colored ones. If they're supposed to be white, they should be, you know, glowing white. If dark red, whatever. An old Italian green grocer told me that the darker the color on the variety of whatever you're selecting, the more nutrient content. And all the nutrients are in there. It's necessary for you to process those sugars and use them properly. It's not like, you know, we refine all these grains and sugars and take all the nutrients out of them. A little tip I read about just a while back.
All right.
If you want to grow asparagus year-round,
yeah,
you only harvest one quarter of your crop at a time for 3 months, and you let the others go up to the leafy foliage and store sugars on the roots, then you harvest another quarter. When you get into the winter months, the quarter you're going to harvest, you cut down the tops and all, and they start setting up new shoots, but you have to cover them, mulch them down good with hay or leaves and then a roll cover over the hole up there perhaps. You can harvest asparagus year-round. That'll give some of your farmers ideas on other crops that can grow year-round perhaps. And an article in Organic Gardening magazine years ago, A market farmer out in Colorado or somewhere, he started thinking about the requirements of his crops. Besides good soil and water, they also actually really need a good amount of air. He happened to have an irrigation system in place, so in times when he was not pumping water to irrigate the crops, he just tried sections to see and compare against not doing it. He pumped air, compressed air into his irrigation system and got plenty of air to the roots of the plants, and he increased his yields considerably, substantially.
Wow. You know, Jim, how many years have you been calling this show?
A few, Ray.
Yeah, you know, every show you bring something to the table. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it very
much. Did I amp anybody up on the?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'd love to answer you.
I thought it was great information.
Alisa. Already amped enough already, eh?
Go ahead, Alisa.
I'm going to put my nutritionist hat on for 1 second. I'm really glad you mentioned that about the colors because, of course, you know, one of the sound pieces of nutritional advice is to eat as many colors as you can because you really will take in so many nutrients. But I think one thing people don't realize about plant-based eating is that plants offer not only so many vitamins and, of course, fiber, but you can get – making up protein, other macronutrients like protein from eating them. So they really are an extraordinary asset in terms of health. And just the last thing I'll say, because I feel we've spoken so much about plants, I'm going to just segue very briefly to the fact that many of our recipes are based on what animal farmers raise. So I don't want to not mention them. And we were very, very struck by how these farmers so humanely dealt with their animals. So I just want to, again, shout out to them and shout out that if you're going to eat animal protein, I would buy it from farmers like the ones in our area.
All right. Well, while we're on that topic, and before we get to our next caller, let's throw this to Rob. Rob, what is your favorite meat recipe in this book?
Well, so, Ray, you happen to be asking a question of a vegetarian or a pescatarian.
All right, let's throw it to somebody else then. Now, Elisa, you don't do it either, right?
Actually, Brian is probably the best person to ask that question.
For Pete's sake. All right, Brian, just give me one here and we'll move on.
Well, actually, I happen to like all of the meat recipes. Local grass-fed, humanely raised animals by far have much more flavor than commodity meat.
Yeah.
But I'd say the one recipe that I think I had the most fun making and I think I like to eat the most is the galupki, which is the stuffed cabbage. And I think it could be it's so versatile because you can stuff it with lamb, you can stuff it with pork, stuff it with beef. You know, you can utilize meats. You can utilize the lesser cuts. So you're not using, you know, the $20 a pound tenderloin. You're using the $4 a pound shoulder.
Right.
So it's like, that to me makes cooking sense. It's got, you know, it's braised for a long time, so it's got flavor and terroir, and you can tell it was made with love, and it's got that home feel. That's my favorite.
Okay.
I'll add that. We also give veggie alternatives for many of the recipes, including that one. So I happen to love
that
one.
We do.
We use veggie sausage instead of, pork. So, that's a good one.
And I just want to mention, the recipe Brian mentioned, the pork shoulder, was inspired by Climbing Tree Farm. And those farmers just were so striking to us in the way that they raised their pigs. Their concern, this is the Gales, Skylar and Colby Gale. But they talked about how that if they ever don't think about killing animals, if that ever stops from becoming something they really give it a lot of thought and care and attention to, that they would stop raising meat. They were just so thoughtful on this subject. So just a shout out to them as well.
All right. And now I'll throw this one to the vegetarians among us here today. You know, your book is on the Countryman Press, and it's a division of Norton. And every book publisher sends recommended media questions. The final question on the list, and I'll throw this to you two, what do you think is the next kale? And I want to say, what was the first kale?
Okay. Have an answer. We do have an answer.
Brian may have a different answer.
I'll give you our answer, Brian. Cauliflower. And we have some wonderful recipes for cauliflower in our book, including cheesy roasted cauliflower. We have a curried cauliflower. And, Ray, I'm sure you've seen in some of the restaurants, cauliflower steak is now quite popular. So we think cauliflower is a great one. I should also mention that, what's that?
I was going to hit Brian, too. On
Brian, what's yours?
You have it closer.
I think you nailed it. I mean, think about it. People grate it, and they make risotto out of it. It's like it replaces pasta, it replaces steak, it replaces potatoes. It's totally the new kale.
I mean,
there you go.
So, but I have to shout out for like the old kale.
Yeah, we're pretty
fans.
Oh, and there's a recipe in our book. It's a kale and peanut salad, which was inspired by Holiday Farm, of course, Hollybrook Farm, which Brian, originated. A wonderful recipe. I have to say, I love working with kale, but my pet peeve is that people don't massage kale and break down. Fiber and it becomes very, gritty and hard to eat. But if that recipe, you massage it and it's really soft.
But Ray, you didn't ask me what's my favorite dessert.
Ah, well, we only have. All right. Why don't we do a quick dessert here and then we got to grab a phone call or two. By the way, I think massaging the kale is a terrible euphemism and we don't talk about it on the radio. All right. What's your favorite?
Is there another word to say?
That's okay.
What's your favorite dessert, Rob?
Yeah, I love the glazed blueberry lemon bread. That is die for, right, Brian?
Yeah, it's pretty tasty.
We should have started with that. Oh, no, we're almost out of time here. All right, let's go to Doug in Grafton. Doug, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I'd like to make a point about the farmers, the local farmers being not only sustainable but regenerative in their practices. And the point I make, too, is that if the nutrients aren't in the soil, it can't be in the food. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have a couple of minutes here. Let's go to Jen in Tyringham. Jen.
Hi, this is Jen over at Woven Roots Farm and Education Center in Tyringham. So happy to hear all of you on the phone. Hey.
Friend.
Perfect timing to have Doug make that fantastic compliment about and comment about regenerative agriculture, as it's something that we're really proud to be able to share with our community. So I wanted to give a shout out and a huge thank you for the incredible cookbook that you have cultivated together. It's really an honor to be a part of this project with you. And I'm here with my assistant farm manager, Matt. We're harvesting and processing radicchio for our CSA members for tomorrow. And I'm curious as to what your favorite thing to do is with radicchio.
Okay.
I like it as an addition to my greens mix, but I also like to grill it and use it as its own. Mm-hmm. If I had some heads right now, I would probably use some scape pesto, and then just grill it, serve it like that with a little sea salt.
Mm. Well, that sounds delicious. Mm.
I would just add, and that sounds great. Have radicchio recipes in the book? Okay, next one. But I think that if you pair radicchio with any other greens, to me, one of the ways that you can really, increase the flavor and interest of any dish is just really using a mixture of different kinds of the same lettuces or different kinds of lettuces, et cetera, greens. I think it makes such a difference. And I know, like, for example, in the pies, using different apples, not sticking to one variety makes such a huge difference in terms of the outcome.
Well, we are done with this program.
Yeah, the addition of the bitterness from radicchio into some sweet greens, I think, is awesome.
All right, that's it now, people. We've had too much fun today. I want to thank you all. Thank you all for being here. Alisa Spungen-Bildner and Rob Bildner, the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook is fabulous. Well done. Thank you both for being here. Chef Brian Ahlberg, what's the name of the new restaurant, and how do we find out more about that?
The Break Room at Greylock Works, and it's www.thebreakroomgw.com.
All right,
you can check it out.
Thank you all very much for being here. Support.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you all. Great talking to you, Ray.
Yeah, great seeing you.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Brian,
really
for joining
appreciate
us.
It.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care.
All right,
take
next
care,
time Ray, we'll see you all in the studio here. Support comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts, specializing in black garlic and black garlic products with custom-made infused blends of sea salts and hot pepper blends, rollingrocksalt.com. And Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats, home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days, Pekarsky's.com. Thanks again to Alisa, Rob, and Chef Brian for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Oh, my gosh, Charlene Knight was in there. The whole show, taking the calls. Thank you very much. I'm Ray Graff. Have a splendid weekend. We'll see you Monday at 2. We'll talk psychiatry. All right? So you be ready for that now. Plan ahead.